It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Sal Capaccio on this occasion of the Bills. We'll use anything. On the Bills wrapping up mandatory minicamp. 48 days off after today. You know, we didn't talk about the Dan Lieberfeld point about how much time there can be between the end of this and the start of that.
Right.
It'll be almost 7 weeks, though, Sal. And Dan was talking like 5 weeks is just a lot. I mean, he liked that the Jets had their or have their mandatory practices later
next week. Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, do you have a position on this? I don't think I have one.
No, I'd have to see some sort of actual analytics or numbers. Let's remember the Bills started earlier than the Jets. They started earlier than most teams because they have a new head coach. So while that's true, maybe the Jets are going later and other teams will go later. The Bills started on April 6th. Several teams didn't start until, I think the Jets will be included here, April 20th, 2 weeks later. So you're still getting a full, I think it's 10 weeks with a new coach, 9 weeks otherwise, either way, somewhere in there. I don't know if there's a benefit either way. And I also would say every team would probably be different based on your roster and who you are and what those guys do.
Shouldn't the Jets actually be allowed to practice constantly? I mean, really? Let's just get them off the mat here.
Guys should have live-in coaches if you're on the Jets, maybe.
So Dorian Strong is the news here, Sal. Explain it to us.
So as you guys know, and you know, Bills fans probably know that Dorian Strong suffered a neck injury in week 4 last year. He was subsequently placed on injured reserve, had neck surgery. He missed the entire season. There's been a lot of talk about maybe, you know, his career being in jeopardy and where he goes from here. We really haven't had a lot of clarity every time we've talked to Brandon Bean about it. Dorian Strong today, he has not participated in any OTAs, minicamp, nothing like that. Dorian Strong today was waived NFI. That's non-football injury. You could say, wait a minute, he got hurt in football.
Right.
Yes, but that was last year. It's NFI because it's a year later. He did not get hurt this year doing something during football. So they can put him on NFI that way. So he gets played. It's really just a technicality. But either way, it works the same as a football injury or regular injury reserve, to be honest with you, in a lot of ways. But
I'm glad you clarified that because that was a question I was going to have. It's like, how in the world did they put an NFI? You just said he got hurt in week 4, but gotcha. All right, good.
100%. And I thought the same thing and then realized, well, it's last year. So it's a non-football injury because of that. So what happens now, because he's waived, he is subject to waivers. That's why the word is there. And any team in the NFL can claim him over the next 24 hours. They'd have to put him on their 90-man roster. Let's assume that's not going to happen. I mean, some team could do that and think maybe he'll rehab and he'll play for them. That could happen. Assuming he does not get claimed, he clears waivers, he reverts back to the Bills, and then the Bills will put him on actual injured reserve. And at that point, I would say it would be a reserve, you know, with an injury designation, but either way, he'll go on injury reserve, and then his season will be over. He will not count against the roster.
What are the odds he gets claimed? Very, very small?
Very small. I mean, a team would have to put him on their roster now and release somebody, and they could do that and just hold him, and then they could put him on injured reserve before the start of the season. So they could definitely do that and then see where it goes. I mean, in a case like this, though, a guy that's been with you and your doctors for over a year and going through this, I don't know if a team would want to bring that into their building and have to go through that again and all the different medical and testing that would have to go along with it. So I would assume no one's going to claim him, but you never say never in a league like this.
Yeah. So it obviously does not bode well for his future, but it's, I guess I want to say it's possible he could just rehab through another season and try this again next spring?
Yeah, that's right. He could do that. And the team could do that. And it sounds like that's exactly what the plan is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two parts of this, right? Number one, that could be the plan, Bulldog, from a football standpoint, which is we'll keep him on the roster. We'll keep, you know, we'll go through the doctors, the procedures. Is there another procedure? Is there not? Can he rehab? Can he play? And I think there's an element of just trying to do right by the kid. You know, you drafted him And I think that means a lot with him and his family and all those kinds of things. So that's, you know, probably a part of this where they'll keep him around. They'll keep him on the roster. He's a part of the team. He came in as a draft pick last year. He knows the guys. And I think it would be good for everybody in the organization to have him around the building.
And just one more thing on him. What's the upside? There was some excitement about this player. Sixth-round pick as a rookie, though. Is he somebody that the Bills are, you know, if it's a relative term here, but just like super serious about and optimistic for?
I mean, they were. I don't think you can be at this point. In fact, they drafted two guys. They drafted a guy in the second round, IGB. They drafted another guy in Toriano Pride. But Mike, this was a player that they were excited about. And in fact, I would compare a lot of what we hear about IGB right now, but the way they were talking about Dorian Strong is as you know, the season went on last year, and he wasn't a second round pick. He was a sixth rounder, but he was noticeable and he was getting on the field. He was physical and they liked him. They liked his length, his physicality, a lot of what IGB is bringing now. And look what happened at the end of the year. And the corners, we know very well how much the corner position mattered as far as injuries were concerned. And that was one of the reasons, because a guy they had counted on that had played pretty well early in the season suddenly wasn't available to them. And that was a big deal. So I would say not now, though. I doubt they're optimistic he can actually play now. But you make these moves, so who knows, maybe in the future that can happen.
Before we move on to the less newsier portion of our conversation here, there were accompanying moves. There were a couple of players signed, one of whom made maybe the play of the day yesterday.
Devin Tompkins. Remember we talked about him? And I said to you guys, I said the play of the day was turned in by this guy. And he actually has some NFL wide receiver experience. He played for the Panthers and the Buccaneers and the Falcons on their practice squad. And yesterday he made a play where Shane Buechele saw him deep, put one a little bit too far, but he laid out. And he's not the biggest dude. And he just laid out and he made a great catch. And everybody in the offensive sideline was like, oh, one of those kinds of deals. They were going crazy. And today he got signed to a contract. So good for him. And I mean, maybe it was partly that catch. I'm sure that had something to do with it, you know. And I think obviously, you know, just looking at the roster and what they need, they not only signed him, but wide receiver Max Tomczak, who's very interesting to me because this is a guy that played at Youngstown State and he did really well there. This is Mike Tomczak's nephew, by the way. He signed with the Bills and as an undrafted free agent. Week two of OTAs, I went out there and he wasn't there. And all of a sudden they waived him. I'm like, okay, well, he's not around anymore. Well, they brought him back and they signed him. They did also waive another undrafted free agent wide receiver, Gabriel Benyard. And then they also waived with an injury designation running back Desmond Reed. A lot of people were excited about him. He actually had he's a good running back from Pitt who signed with the Bills as an undrafted free agent.
With Sal Capaccio, I think I saw from Sneaky Joe Tompkins, I'm not sure if it was the last pass, but the last yards of Tom Brady's NFL career regular season were passed to Tompkins.
Oh, wow.
Check out Joe's Twitter for the exact words on that stat. Sal, so Strong and the injury was there, and I'm not sure if they had real expectations for him this year because of it. What is your view on the secondary as a whole? I feel like this could be anything. This answer could be anything. With Benford as strong as he's been and Hairston off a rookie year where he was hurt a lot. Like maybe you get the upside you wanted when you picked him in the first round. Bishop is young. Gardner Johnson is a name. So is Geno Stone, for that matter, as maybe depth. And then Igbinosin, you mentioned him already, second round pick. Are you thinking that, I mean, there's some turnover here, obviously. Taron Johnson is gone. Are you thinking that the secondary is a strength of the defense or of the team, or are there too many questions?
I think the top of the secondary can be very good. I really do. I like what I see a lot. I think that they pick kind of the right formula and players for what they want to do defensively. Thinking about Jim Leonard, his scheme, talking to players, watching C.J. Gardner-Johnson yesterday. I mean, the guy's just an athlete. He makes plays. Knowing what Cole Bishop did last year, albeit he's injured right now, but you know the ascension he was on, I really kind of like what they are building at safety. I like this Jalen Kilgore kid that they drafted a lot. I think he fits in exactly what they want to do there. On the outside, Christian Bedford, we know he's very, very good. I still think Max Hairston could be very good. We didn't see enough of him last year. Davison Igbinosin really is kind of the prototypical guy that Jim Leonard wants. He's spoken highly of, hey, you know, we didn't have this kind of guy in the room. I love all that. I'm concerned about their depth. And I still wonder if they're going to add to that, because injuries will happen. They do happen. We know that. Slot corner D. Alford, I think he kind of fits exactly what they want out of the slot. Not Taron Johnson anymore. Not going to play 90% of the snaps. You don't need a guy like that. We'll see what happens with Jordan Hancock. I think he's kind of slated to be more of the slot corner here. I just wonder what they do about depth, because that's been such a talking point after last year. And even Brandon Bean said corner was their number one need. He didn't mean at the top of the roster. He meant overall. Yeah. They go out and they draft Davis and Igbinosa, and they draft Toriano Pride. Well, guys, I mean, think of their outside corners. Benford, Harrison, Igbinosa, and then it's Toriano Pride, Kari Walker, and Jordan Dunbar. Like, where's your fourth? Is that your fourth guy? Is Toriano Pride actually going to, you know, show up at camp and be a guy that can make the roster and help you? Maybe. I mean, he was drafted. That's possible. But that's where the Trey White discussion comes from, right? We did Always Game Day in Buffalo, Matt Bove and I. And Matt said, and I don't disagree, that like he wouldn't be surprised if they go out and sign Tre'Davious White or even someone like him before training camp starts. And then even at safety for me. Beyond Bishop and Gardner Johnson, I like Jalen Kilgore. But then you have Sam Franklin. Yes, he has NFL experience, but he's mostly a special teams player. And DeMar Hamlin, and I know you guys know, I'll tell you, DeMar Hamlin can play. He, at least it gives you a baseline of a guy who understands the system, but this is a new system. Geno Stone, but I'd like to see a little bit more there.
It's a lot of names.
I know you know, the beat reporters, the men and women who are out there watching, not like today, but like earlier in the week, you know, sometimes there's scuttlebutt on the sidelines and things you guys in the media room might debate. How hot takey is it, and has it come up? You mentioned how Leonard has talked about Igbinosa. How much of a hot take is it to say you think he starts the opener? Because I'm leaning that way. It's not that they don't like Harrison. They're never going to say they don't like Harrison, but like it wasn't for this scheme. And I really wonder. It just sounds to me like something I'm on guard about. I guess not like I'm scared of it. I just mean like I'm sort of watching out for it.
I don't think it's hot takey. I've heard people, we've had these debates and talks. Where I fall is, I wouldn't be surprised if IGB ultimately starts. I don't think it's that early over Max Harrison. I'd be surprised if that were the case. But is it possible? Sure. And I also think it would have to be because he really shows what he can do, and not right. because Max Harrison necessarily falters because of what you said. It just fits a little better, right? The puzzle just fits a little bit more and better with a guy like Davis and Igbinosa, maybe than Max Harrison. Max Harrison has to prove he can stay healthy as well. But certainly there are people, I would say, that cover the team that would be of the same mindset as you, Bulldog, which is, I wouldn't be surprised if this kid is starting week one over Max Harrison. I still need to see it. You know, yesterday, there's a play yesterday where, so I don't know if I told you guys a couple of days ago, Keon Coleman catches a pass. Igbinosa kind of wraps him a little bit, and Keon didn't appreciate it, so Keon tosses the ball at him. There's some pushing and shoving, right? Just kind of normal, you know, football stuff, and they go back to their huddle. Well, then yesterday, I mean, I don't know if he did it on purpose, but Josh targeted Keon on a pass against Davis and Igbinosa near the end zone, and it was one-on-one. And Igbinosa just, he got called for a penalty. There were officials on the field. There were officials actually, you know, out there. So Keon turns around, he looks, the officials throw the flag, and I mean, Igbinosa was hot. He was hot, really hot, yelling at the officials kind of sort of like in a way, like not getting in their face yelling, but definitely very demonstrative in his reaction. And Khalil Shakir comes over, he's just pointing at the flag, looking at him, pointing at the flag. Like, this is a kid that is really, really competitive. He's got the juice that they love, but there's some growing pains there with anybody, right? I mean, it was interference. I was standing right there. Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that he's going to have to clean up. Remember, he had the holding penalty. So
yep.
I just think if he can kind of make sure that he's in the moment and he's doing the things right technically he's supposed to be doing, I think he could compete for a starting job.
Two seasons ago, he had big penalty problems, and last year cleaned it up, right? That was the story on him.
That's exactly right. And the Bills love that about him, because they said it meant that he took it serious enough to get better about it. And I like that, right? Like, he said, I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen again. So when you look at the penalty numbers, which I believe were 21 total, 16 one year, or maybe 16 total, 12 one year and 4 the next. I think somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. He took it seriously enough to cut down on those, and the Bills said that was something that actually attracted them to him.
So they didn't stop practice and review it and have everybody just stand there
they
for 5 minutes?
They did not stop practice and review it.
You can't review that play in mandatory minicamp.
No.
Not even in real games. Can you review that?
No, but I'll tell you guys, I mean, it also was another point of like this whole, that one of the things that's really stuck out about all these OTAs and minicamps is these guys really kind of getting after each other, the offense and the defense, the C.J. Gardner-Johnson and, you know, the way he barks and Josh Allen and, you know, yesterday with Khalil Shakir pointing at that flag and looking at, you know, Davis and Igbinosin and giving him that smile and smirk like, yep, there's the flag, pal. What are you going to do about it? It was just really interesting the last few weeks watching this all take place.
How is Brady different from McDermott so far when you watch him like run a practice, or whether he gets involved as much or less involved?
I don't know if it's more involved or less involved, except I would say more from this standpoint, where I think Joe is almost like more constant of the high energy after every play, saying something, doing something, all those kinds of things. Sean would do it once in a while, but Sean would kind of let the practice play out, and then every once in a while you knew when Sean McDermott liked or didn't like something, right? Seems like Joe Brady likes or doesn't like something all the time, and he's letting you know about it, and usually in a good way, in a positive way, with either side. But it's funny you say that, because Matt Bove and I actually recorded another podcast today. He told a story, and I didn't know this, he told a story about how he talked to Connor McGovern and said to Connor McGovern, it's really interesting, he said that Joe Brady, from Matt's observation, that when the defense would make a play, that Joe would get super excited about it, even though he's standing maybe more near the offense. Mm-hmm. And he asked Connor, do you think he's doing that on purpose? And Connor said yes. He said, I think he is. And Connor said something to the effect of, he thinks he's even doing it on purpose, like, to Josh, like a get like near Josh, so that Josh knows I'm the head coach and I like that the defense just did that to you. I'm not your coordinator position coach anymore.
Well, I wasn't there. It sounds a little bit like acting, but
that's a new relationship.
You know, yeah. there's an element of that in this job, I'm sure. Well, this is the last Bills workday for a long time. What have we not covered? Not that we won't talk again between now and 7 weeks from now. But is there a story, Sal, that you can think of, a player, something about the makeup of the team that has gone under-addressed?
There is one. I brought it up at the end of our podcast today because I was doing the same thing. I'm like, what have we not talked about? We have yet to see Tyler Bass kick.
That's what I was just – I thought we asked you about him yesterday, and I wanted to ask again. That, I think, is a good one.
And it doesn't mean that anything's wrong with him. They just haven't done that when we've been out there. He's the only kicker on the team, though. They actually got rid of another kicker they had. He's the only kicker. He's wearing number 16, which is a little bit different. They do have two punters. That will be a story at camp. There's going to be a punting battle between Mitch Wisnowski and Tommy Doman, who they drafted. Reed is the only long snapper. But I do think that the health of Tyler Bass kicking in training camp is going to be a story.
Well, that sounds right. It's a little bit just conspicuous, you know, with that's kind of it's in your voice that last year was a mystery, really, for a lot of it. Just what are we ever going to see this guy again, you know?
Right.
And Prater stepped in, no pun intended. He did all right. Did really well. And he was up, right, Prater?
Yes. He was a free agent.
Just a one-year thing to fill in. Emergency.
I mean – He basically had told me, like, he's like, hey, you know, I'm enjoying it, but, you know, he's getting older and lives out in Arizona, and at some point, you know, he's going to go back and do that, and that's what it is. And he even said, he says, when Tyler's ready, you know, by all means, like, yeah, I'm just here to fill in until he's ready. And, you know, apparently that's the case, but we haven't seen that yet. I want to see it. I want to see Tyler Bass actually, you know, kick the ball. I guess if I could, you know, stretch for another one, I was looking at something today. What was it about? I think the Dalton Kincaid story has been something we talked about a lot. Oh, I know what it is. Staying on special teams. I wonder what they do at the return spot. I'm not talking about kick return. That should be Ray Davis, maybe Ty Johnson. Like, who's the punt returner? Because how does that impact the wide receiver room? Because Mecole Hardman can do it. But are you keeping Mecole Hardman on the roster? What does that mean at wide receiver? So I think two special teams areas that we really don't get a chance to really watch that stuff or really get a full gauge of it at camp, I should say. We do watch some of the return guys, but a lot of guys are doing it this time of year. I think those are two storylines to watch at camp.
You know, Coleman would be an idea there. I just wonder, with all the issues he's had, I feel like trusting him, not that him not showing up on time has to be connected with whether he could competently, you know, be trusted to field punts and return punts, but Like that, if he's going to be good enough to make the roster and not squeezed out by someone, but also not be like at the top of the rotation, like, man, that's a I'd rather do that than have Shakir, although you trust Shakir to catch the ball and not make a mistake. But you're still, it's added on field. It's more snaps. It's more exposure for a guy that's way more important to your offense than Coleman probably will be. So, like, I wonder, maybe once the summer comes, we'll see where he is, if he is at all, in the rotation of guys fielding punts.
I agree with that. I did ask Joe Brady back at the Combine about this very question, and you bring it up, which is, do you really want Khalil Shakir back there doing that, or would you rather have a dedicated return man? His answer basically suggested they'd rather have a dedicated return man. But, of course, you just said it. They trust Khalil Shakir, and if they needed to do that, they will. And then let's just say they do trust Keon Coleman. I agree. That might be a little better option than to having Khalil Shakir back there putting the wear and tear on his body. I mean, if Keon Coleman can be a top three wide receiver, I think the perfect scenario to me, like, I'm just reading into what Joe Brady said now, and I don't know this for sure, but the perfect scenario would be Keon Coleman wins a top three job. He's on the field. They want him out there. He's doing everything he's supposed to do. So he's out there with DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir, and then we'll just find somebody else that's a good return man, and we don't have to, because that way we can use those guys for how we want to use them.
Yeah. We don't have a lot of time for this, but something I wanted to ask you about was I listened to Alan. Alan spoke, was that on Tuesday that he spoke to the media? I can't remember the days now.
Yes.
But I went back and listened to it last night because I was curious if anybody would be inclined to ask him about the quote. This trip to wire, you said, we started talking about Tyler Bass, and you said Tyler, and I remembered, I think we're talking to Tyler Dunn tomorrow.
Yep.
And he wrote a piece that dropped over the weekend, along, you know, like Tyler does, golongtd.com, on Allen. And there's a quote in that story from Allen about his future, basically. And I wonder if you had any reaction to that. Do you know the quote I'm talking about? I read it. I have it
yes,
right here.
Yes, I'll play this game as long as I can play it the way I want to.
I'm going to play football how I know how to play it until I can't. And when I can't play it the way I want to play it, it's probably when I'm done. But hopefully that's still quite some time. I don't think he was asked about it. At least I didn't hear it. What is your reaction to that? Because we took that for a ride earlier this week. And I don't know. On one hand, I can certainly see where you might think, boy, I thought I had like 8 years left and maybe now it's only four. I don't know.
My reaction is that Josh Allen believes he can play the way he's playing for another 15 years.
Okay.
That I really believe that. I would say that I know Josh Allen well enough to believe that he believes he can play at this level, throwing and running, for 15, 20 more years. It just, he's going to keep doing it. And that quote to me says, I'm going to keep doing that, and I know I can, but the moment I can't, that's when I know that things might be different.
Yeah.
Maybe I have to decide a different future.
20 more years. Could be a grandfather. How many grandfathers have ever been active in the NFL? Not too many.
One, Phillip Rivers.
Philip Rivers.
Right. Wow, right there with the answer, Sal.
Good job. You're at least one.
You're the best.
Tyler Bass married Rick Tootin's daughter, the punter for the Super Bowl 25 Bills, and he's deceased now. And that's the only Bills jersey I have, is a game-worn Rick Tootin jersey. Not Super
Isn't
Bowl.
It also sleeveless, did you tell me?
It's almost sleeveless.
It's real tight around the arms.
You would not stop laughing for a week if you saw me in it.
Yeah, right.
Like the sleeves come down to here. He cut the sleeves so short.
Did you not wear it in here one time?
Maybe I did.
I felt like you were stuffed into that thing like a human sausage. It was incredible.
It might have been right at the end of the Awaken 180 tour. I might try it on.
I know you guys got to go, but I was waiting for you to ask me if I had any questions for you because I had one loaded today, and I want to ask you guys this.
Okay, we'll make time.
Because you've been talking about the game last night, right?
Yeah.
I am always fascinated at the end of a game, college or pro. In that situation, if you guard the inbound pass, and the Spurs decided not to, and it burned them. OG had a clear run to the basket. I hate when you don't guard the inbound. If you thought about that, do you think that mattered?
Fox was over there, but he ran away. He didn't really aggressively. He didn't guard the pass the way Anthony Towns did on the Spurs final chance. And in fact, he tipped that pass. If you didn't know that, I needed a replay this morning to see that because last night, I don't, maybe they got to it last night. I just never saw a replay. I was like, what were they trying to do with that play? That pass didn't make sense. They were going for like a layup dunk, like an alley-oop to the point guard. Why is his name escaping me? I'm watching these games. Oh, my God. Anyway, Towns blocked it. So Fox is over there, but as soon as it gets inbounded, he runs over to double-team Brunson and leaves the guy alone is what happened there.
It just made it so easy. I believe, if I'm right, I believe Rick Pitino has said something to the effect of he always has regretted not guarding Grant Hill when he threw it down to Christian Laettner. Like that, like you gave him a free throw. Right. And I always remember that. And I'm like, that's right. Like, why would you do that? And then I'm watching, and I had one of my former coaches / teachers, basketball, loves basketball, texted me today, and his beef was, why do you have the defensive player of the year, Wemby, on the perimeter in that situation? And I went back and said, you're right. Like, if he's in the paint, maybe that doesn't happen. I don't know. It's just, mm-hmm. I thought it was fascinating, the end of that game.
I gave up on it, I have to admit, at halftime. So, I'm writing all this down. Sal, thanks for toughing it out today with your voice hurting a little bit, and we'll give you tomorrow off. Appreciate your time.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by New York's only outlet, Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
I believe as the game was ending, I was watching a Netflix documentary about Michael Jackson called The Verdict. Three parts. I got through part one.
Castle is the name I needed there, by the way.
Castle.
I've really liked him.
Andrew UConn, Castles.
Really nice player. That was there, too. Like, when I turned it off, I thought, is he trying to throw it? He wasn't trying to throw it where he threw it. That didn't make any sense. But Castle, they were so worried about Wemby, he swung around back, and it was there. Like, if Anthony Towns just got a fingertip on it, and if that ball goes to the hoop, he is in the air and maybe dunking it for the win. It was totally there. So great job by the Knicks to guard that pass and get a finger on it.
Yeah, because you can't lose when you've caught up.
Come all the way back from 29 down.
You can't lose at the buzzer after that.
It'd be really tough.
Time for a break. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. Give us a call, 803-0550. This is WGR.